Let's say hello to Ryan Pike from flamesnation.ca. That's better English. Hello, Piker. How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you, Pat?
I'm better now that I'm speaking to you.
Aww.
1 week ago when we chatted, I talked to Kleiner about this last segment. Like, 1 week ago when we chatted, because we chat Mondays, had no idea the firestorm that was about to blow up around this team. It's crazy how things have changed. Just 1 week ago, just talking about a team that had just snapped a losing skid at six, and now here we are. They don't have the same head coach anymore. The hockey world was centered on Calgary for seven straight days, and they're 3-0-1 in their last four games. Like, what an absolutely jam-packed week we just went through here.
I was talking to Matthew Tkachuk after the last game, and he and I were sort of joking about they finished October or November 500. They were 6-6-2. All of their losses pretty much were all sort of in that one giant swath of mediocrity, and then they were okay at the beginning of the month, and they've become pretty okay to end the month, and in the middle it was just a swirl of chaos, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. What are your observations or reflections on how the Bill Peters saga played out and how the Flames handled the whole thing?
It's going to be interesting to see what happens, if anything happens like this in the future, because I think, you know, let's be honest, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, like the only thing that was really remotely close to this kind of thing, like some, you know, past off ice thing emerging and basically, you know, blowing up the hockey world for a while, was the Graham James saga in 96. And that obviously had the criminal implications to it, and, you know, and ended up with some jail time. But, you know, realistically, there's not a playbook for how you handle something like this, especially, you know, if anyone who reads CBA for fun like me, for players, like with the whole Slapovoinov situation a few years ago, for players, there's the part of the CBA which basically gives, you know, the league the ability to suspend, terminate, whatever, players who, I think the term is, behave in conduct that besmirches the league or brings disrepute among the gentlemanly game of hockey. And off-ice staff, you know, hockey ops staff, non-players, aren't subject to that. So
right.
There's a lot less, you know, there's a lot less, or a lot more gray area, rather, and it's a lot less specific for how it can be handled. And I think from a comm standpoint, I mean, you know, you had to figure out, you know, there's probably legal advice that was probably, you know, very severely restricting what the Flames and the league could or could not say or could or could not do. And I think that's why it lasted as long as it did, because, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, anyone who, as soon as, you know, Frank Cervelli had the allegations from Akeem Aliu confirmed on Tuesday morning, and it, probably as soon as the Flames got the conversations done that they wanted to get done, you know, I can't imagine Bill was going to come back. So I think the die was cast pretty early, but just in terms of the legal wranglings and the contractual stuff and the financial stuff, it seems like there was a lot of stuff that, you know, we might not ever be privy to because of all the complications.
The guy that I think in the end I felt for the most was the GM. Like, Brad Treliving, he was the one tasked with conducting this investigation, doing all the interviews, all of that. This was the guy that he hired, and there's a friendship there. And so he was, and he was the one who was meeting the media, answering all the tough questions, and was the spokesman for the entire thing. And yet so much of it was out of his hands. He had different masters to answer to. He had the NHL to answer to, and he also had Flames ownership and higher ups to answer to. Those were the two parties that were determining what the ultimate fate of Bill Peters was. So Brad Treliving did all the dirty work, and he was the guy that was facing the media and taking a lot of those slings and arrows, and yet so much of the final decision and the final outcome, I believe, was wholly out of his hands.
Yeah, and I, you know, and let's be honest, if you talk to Brad, like, Brad's a hockey guy, he's a scout, you know, he loves being at the rink, he loves talking to other hockey ops people and sort of, you know, to a certain extent, and hopefully, you know, if he's listening, he doesn't think this is derogatory, he's kind of a hockey nerd, you know, he's sort of, that's his wheelhouse, and I think he has spent the last week or 10 days just completely out of his wheelhouse, and he seemed at times physically uncomfortable by it, because, you know, if you're not used to dealing with things that are of a certain area, it can put you off center. And I think especially with the nature of the things he was being forced to deal with, you know, I agree too. I feel for the guy, because it must have not been a fun week at all.
Yeah. And you could, like, that news conference on Friday, you could tell how the strain of those 4 days prior had weighed on him. That week must have taken years off the guy's life, and the good news is that the whole saga is behind them. But it was an extreme, and his term was, Brad's term was, and you used it a little earlier, there's no playbook. I really do believe that from his standpoint, did the best he possibly could, knowing all the circumstances and all the handcuffs that he had to work with. So the Flames can start to move past the Bill Peters mess now. Ryan Pike's with us from FlamesNation.ca. Okay, let's turn this thing positive. David Riddick, the NHL second star of the week. Last week, 2-0-1, 941 save percentage. This guy's been this team's best player, and it's not even close. Your observations on Riddick thus far this season?
Let's be honest, you know, he's been the team's safety blanket at times. You know, he's a guy that when they throw him in net, you know exactly where you're going to get from night in and night out. And that's a big departure from what the Flames got from Mike Smith during his tenure. And I think, you know, even dating back to last season, before Riddick had that knee sprain on New Year's Eve, he was basically playing like he was playing right now. He's, you know, he gives you, you know, an honest account of himself every game. If he wins, he gives credit to the team. If he loses, he says he wasn't very good. So according to David Riddick, David Riddick's probably the 30th best goalie in the league. But he's the most used goalie. He's, you know, I think second in shutouts, second in wins. You know, he's leading in minutes and games started in games. So they've needed to rely on him heavily, especially in last week when I think, you know, there's so much uncertainty swirling around and so much weird stuff that I think Jeff Ward mentioned this in his press conference the other day. You know, they just wanted some normalcy. So you throw in the guy you can rely on and the lines and the pairings you can rely on and just move from there. And I think, you know, so much of what has worked for the Flames this year has flowed from the goaltending position out.
Leads the league in starts and minutes played. What's your feel on his workload thus far?
I don't think he's going to end up playing 82 games. I don't think he's going to, I think it'd be, you know, challenging for him to play 60. So I think from here on out, they might, you know, look for time to sort of work Cam Talbot in because, you know, Talbot outside of, I think one game where he wasn't particularly great, Talbot's been, you know, pretty dang good every time he stepped in. And I think moving him in to a bit more of a regular role, like once a week or once every couple weeks could get him a bit of a chance to find a rhythm. But, you know, for right now, the Flames are probably only going to go as far as David Riddick can carry them.
3-0-1 in their last four games as a whole. That's the longest point streak of the season. For me, I still don't know what the Calgary Flames are, and that's been my biggest challenge. But what have your takeaways been or your overall thoughts have been of the last week where they've put together this four-game point streak?
They've been fine. They've been good enough to get points. The Flames of the six-game losing streak were finding ways to lose, and often, you know, I think the playbook for the Flames during the losing streak was they give up a first goal. They you know, play pretty well two-way hockey, but a mistake ends up in the back of their net. Okay, now it's down 1-0. So they cheat a bit on their tactics, and they press a little bit more in the offensive zone in order to try to even things up because they don't want to chase. And that ends up causing more catastrophes and more odd-man rushes and more goals for the other team. And then all of a sudden it's 2-0, 3-0, and things sort of snowball a bit. That's sort of been the mindset for the Flames. They've figured out ways to lose games, and, you know, it hasn't really been them getting wildly outplayed. It's just been a bunch of, you know, systemic things creeping into their games over the course of games that make them a little bit prone to that kind of defensive porousness. But I think the thing that we've seen from them in the last, you know, four or five games has been, you know, they're sticking with it. They're being a little bit more patient with themselves and they're not really pressing too much. And I think, you know, dating back to the last game, I think against Ottawa was great because they played a pretty good first period, didn't give up too much either way, but, you know, they spent a lot of time in the offensive zone. And I think the thing that separated the last few games from the games before them is they're not really visibly getting frustrated by not scoring right away. It seems like they were able to pour it on against Ottawa and they get that late goal to get some reward. And then when the rest of the game, you know, went the other way, it seemed like they didn't break as much as they previously would. It seemed like they're sticking with it a lot more. And I think that comes from just the relief of, okay, good, we can score. Okay, good. If we stick with it, we'll get rewarded. And I think, You know, as much as, you know, you and I can shout regression and talk about shooting percentages, if you're on the ice and the light doesn't go on, like, they had 3 out of 4 games where they didn't score a damn goal. And that's gotta play tricks on your mind. You know, it's gotta make you think, okay, I'm gonna cheat a little bit here because I'll be the guy who breaks the goal scoring slump. And then it just turns into catastrophe going the other way because, you know, teams are too good in the NHL for you to be able to cheat systems on them.
So, Flames getting a little healthier. They've got Travis Hamonic knocking on the door to a return. Right behind him, Austin Zarnik. Sam Bennett has started skating on his own as well. Specifically knowing Zarnik and Bennett getting closer to returning. How do they keep Dylan Dubé in the lineup and on the roster?
Ooh, that's a good question. Right now, correct me if I'm wrong, right now they have one healthy extra forward, and that's Zach Rinaldo. I think it's safe to say that when Zarnik is brought back, Rinaldo goes, and that's a pretty easy move to make. But in terms of the other moves, I mean, you know, right now at the fourth line is Reeder, Jankowski, and Frolik. And the easiest guy to send out would probably be Toby Reeder if you want to keep Dubé up. You know, booting out Reeder is probably the simplest way to do it. But Reeder's inexpensive, and Reeder's been pretty effective in terms of what he's been asked to do. You know, not playing a ton, but playing some PK and being pretty good at that. I mean, very quietly, the Flames have a top five PK in the NHL, and that, you know, you can't sneeze at that. So you probably want to do what you can to build off of that if you can. But, you know, Dylan Dubé has been a big part of probably the team's best line of the last 3, 4, or 5 games. And I think, if nothing else, he's been a driver for them. He's been noticeable, and you know, I think if you ask Milan Lucic and Derek Ryan, I think having Dubé on that line makes both those guys better. And I think at this point, you need to do what you can to build on strength. So maybe you look at making a move involving Jankowski, because you know, Mark Jankowski, you know, he is averaging less than a shot a game. I think he's averaging like maybe a third or a quarter or half a shot a game, which is for a guy who's supposed to be, you know, driving, you know, the center's usually the guy that drives the bus on the line. He hasn't done a heck of a lot of driving this year, and maybe you park him in the press box for a bit, and maybe you wave him and give him a chance to either play somewhere else or get a chance to go down to Stockton and get his mojo back, because, you know, Jankowski, you know, he's played the most hockey in the NHL of any player who hasn't hit the score sheet at all. And that, you know, we were talking about not scoring goals overall probably plays on your mind. You know, it's probably, you know, just going down to Stockton and lighting the lamp a little bit and getting his confidence going a bit could do nice things for his game overall.
With Ryan Pike of FlamesNation.ca joins us Mondays on the Steinberg Show. Jacob Pelche, the only Flames prospect going to World Junior Selection Camp, that was announced earlier today. Tell us about the season that Pelche's having with Moncton in the queue.
Oh, he's having a heck of a season. He's let's be honest, he ain't a big guy. I think he's listed as 5'9", 175, but he can just purr along. He's playing on a line with Minnesota prospect Alexander Kovanov and a rotation of wingers on the other side. But he's been doing a great job just getting points and getting multiple points per game. I mean, he scores a lot. He scores a lot even strength, and he's, you know, consistently, you know, he wears the C. And I think, you know, sometimes when players wear a letter, it weighs on them because they try to do too much or try to change what they're doing. But I think with Pelche, they threw a C on his chest and said, go do your thing. And he's just found ways to score and make his team better. I mean, there's been several games, heck, in the last like 3 weeks, there's been 3 or 4 games where he's gotten points on every single goal his team scores. On the weekend, he had 2 goals and 2 assists in a game they played. He's currently 3rd in the entire Quebec League in points. The only player in the entire league who has more assists than him is Alexandre Lafreniere, the presumptive first overall pick, right, in the upcoming draft. And Lafreniere is only 6 months older than him. So it's not like there's a huge gap in talent or production between the two guys. I mean, you know, there's a gap in size. Pelche is a little bit smaller. I think he plays on a team that's not quite as stacked. But, you know, you got to give Pelche credit because he's arguably very quietly been having one of the more productive draft plus one seasons in recent Flames memory.
And the fact he's doing this all as an 18-year-old. This is 18-year-old season. He's World Junior eligible again next year as well. That might be the most promising thing of all if you're a member of the Flames.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he doesn't turn 19 until March. So the crazy thing is, you know, he's putting up, he's going to put up, you know, probably 100 points in the queue this year. He can't play in the AHL next year because he's not going to be 20 until 2021, which means that he's either got a full Q season left to continue to run up his point totals a bit, or potentially the Flames got some interesting decisions to make. Because, you know, if the idea is, you know, the big knock on the Flames is that right now is they're not getting enough out of their top six offensively, here you have a guy who's played under John Torchetti and has a really good reputation as being a strong two-way player. He plays in every situation, penalty kill, power play, even strength, and he produces in every situation. And if you're seeing a guy like, say, Michael Frolik, will probably leave the Flames organization by some way or another between now and the end of the season, either by a free agency or by a trade at the trade deadline, you got a guy who's not particularly huge in Pelche, but maybe he has a chance to crack the NHL roster next year. Because do you have anybody in the farm system right now who can play that strong a two-way game and chip in some offense? I would argue no, and I think that could give him a really long look at training camp, potentially alongside the likes of Tkachuk and Backlund. Because if you can find a way to complement those two guys with a guy who can just play in every situation, suddenly your top six doesn't look too lean.
And finally, there's the Team Canada news. Pelche will be part of the selection camp roster, which starts a little bit later on this month. December 9th is when Team Canada selection camp begins in Oakville. Tell us about the Team USA selection camp. That's getting announced next week, and there could be some Flames representation there.
Well, you certainly hope so. I mean, you know, it seems pretty pretty evident right now that Spencer Knight, the Florida Panthers prospect, will be the starting goaltender, more likely than not, for Team USA. But Dustin Wolf has, you know, Dustin Wolf's had a heck of a season. You know, we're 20 or so games into a season, and he has a .940 save percentage, which is, you know, outstanding and just, you know, possibly astounding, because guys this late in the season shouldn't have save percentages that high.
Well, he did have a, he had a 936 in 61 appearances last year.
Oh, he's not very good, though. I mean, 936 and 940, and he's not big, so he's, you know, this guy is going to be, right now, statistically, he's one of, if not the best goaltender in the Canadian leagues right now, which says a lot, because there's some good players in the Canadian Hockey League. So, he most likely will be invited to camp. It'd be, you know, completely baffling if he didn't get invited, but he might get some games in. And he's much like Pelche, he's a later birthday, so he's eligible for next year of World Juniors too. So traditionally the Team USA brings along a younger backup to get their feet wet, get a sense of things, and then it'll be his bus to drive next year. So we'll see if he gets games in, but right now he seems a virtual lock to be heading over to the Czech Republic.
Anybody else? Anybody else that you could see on that Team USA roster?
Maybe, there's an outside chance of maybe Dimitrios Kamantzis from Arizona State. He's had a he's been productive. He's more of a two-way guy. So he didn't have showy offensive numbers for Arizona State, but he was at the selection camp and he played pretty well. He didn't stick around the whole time, so he's sort of a bit of a dark horse, simply because, you know, USA Hockey has guys they probably like more or have seen a bit more of, but he's definitely on the radar.
Good stuff, my man. That is very cool. And by the way, Dustin Wolf from the hockey powerhouse of Tustin, California. That's
Dustin from Tustin.
Dustin from Tustin, indeed. Because of that awful pun, you have to leave. Bye, Pike. We'll talk to you next week.
See you, bud.